You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Space Floor and Bay Podcast. My name is Connor Geelan.
And I'm Connor Flannery.
This is our 31st official episode.
Today we're talking about Magic Johnson, David Yeager, and making some predictions for the first round of the NBA playoffs. So with the recent news of Magic Johnson quitting from his position as president of basketball operations for the Los Angeles Lakers, I think we're going to sort of go into why he did that and what does that mean for the Lakers, especially because they kind of need a lot of help for LeBron after this atrocious season that they've had thus far.
And we see that it's going to be a whole different team next year, given the fact that Luke Walton got fired and Magic Johnson's not going to be there. So it's also going to be a new mind to that is handling the decisions to really construct this team again. And first of all, we don't know who that's going to be. Second of all, we don't know who the coach is going to be. And the third, we don't know who they're going to sign this offseason. So anything that it's just going to be totally different this season, which is pretty crazy. But I wanted to go in. Do you kind of respect this decision by Magic Johnson, or was it kind of weak?
I do respect Magic Johnson's decision to quit, just because his reasoning that he wants to have fun again actually makes a lot of sense to me. Considering that the Anthony Davis trade sort of fell through, that they missed the playoffs, that now that D'Angelo Russell is having a fantastic season, and so is Julius Randle, and now I guess sort of also attention is being placed on Magic Johnson as did he mess up the Lakers? You know, did he make a mistake here or there? And how good of a job did he do? I know we criticized in our last episode that he didn't do a fantastic job getting help for LeBron, and maybe that justifies LeBron missing the playoffs to some extent. But because of that, because so much criticism is being placed on Magic Johnson, I kind of understand the idea that he's an NBA great. He's proven enough. He's contributed enough to the league that he's done enough that he just wants to retire and just step out of basketball. That kind of makes sense to me.
But then why did you take the job in the first place? It just, I also understand the reasoning, but
because
it doesn't really sit well for me, given the fact that he just came out and said it without talking to Jeannie Buss, who's
that's messed up.
Of the Lakers.
Yeah.
It really doesn't seem like Magic Johnson at all, because from everything that I've heard about him, I remember I was talking to Edward LeBlanc, who's one of the premier basketball minds for youth development and stuff for basketball in the United States, from Point Guard College, and he said that he met Magic Johnson and he kind of heard his entire life story, and he's just a winner and he just is good at everything that he does and everyone around him loves him. And he seems to really like everyone around him. You see that if you spend 5 minutes with Magic Johnson, you leave that conversation wanting to run through a brick wall for him and being willing to do that. Yeah. And not because it's Magic Johnson.
It's
because of the person he is.
I understand that, but I also don't think that means that he can't quit. I do agree with you on the part that what's her name, Jeannie Buss?
Yeah.
That Jeannie Buss, he should have informed her before making that decision. Or he was so scared to do it that he just went and talked to the media instead and sort of turned into a joke almost. I don't think that was the best way to handle it. But the reasoning of, he wants to go live his life outside of basketball because being the Lakers, president of basketball operations has been so stressful recently and that there's so much media attention on him.
I mean, but what did he expect?
Well, one, because he's Magic Johnson, and two, because it's the Los Angeles Lakers. There's going to be, no matter what the move is, the attention's on him, not Luke Walton or Rob Pelinka, or it's just centered. Everything is centered on Magic Johnson.
He should have known that going into the job, and I think it's kind of just immature for him to take that and just quit.
But he also didn't know they were going to get LeBron going to the job. He didn't know this that were going to happen. He didn't know for sure.
Okay. He didn't know for sure, but he said.
When did he sign on to the job?
He said if I didn't get LeBron James, and another free agent or something, I would quit. Within 2 years.
Yeah.
Which he did, so he was pretty confident in that. And then when he got that, and then he just honestly, I just want to get this on my chest. We talked about this, but Magic Johnson was not good at his job.
Yeah.
He wasn't.
I'm not sure I'm completely ready to say that.
He got LeBron James. But if you talk about the things that he did, he signed Michael Beasley and he signed Lance Stephenson, and he could have used that money to bring back Brooke Lopez, who is a key role player for the best team in the league.
I'm not sure I'm ready to say, like, okay, Magic Johnson wasn't good at his job, but very clearly somebody in the Lakers front office made some questionable decisions in signing a lot of big personalities that did not fit well together this season.
That's Magic Johnson's job.
But we don't know that it's just Magic Johnson, is my point. But, like, yes, Magic Johnson in the Lakers front office as a whole, like, did not do a good job outside of signing LeBron James at building up this team.
Like, I understand why they signed Rondo, but...
Yeah.
Other than that, like, their offseason was kind of disastrous, and everyone made fun of them. But, like, in my mind, I always thought it would just kind of work out to where, like...
you've got LeBron on the team.
That LeBron would do his thing, and then they would, like, make a move and just, like, get someone. Get Anthony Davis, get someone at the deadline to kind of just make things sort of better. And they just didn't really do that, and they passed on Anthony Davis, which personally I was originally fine with.
I don't know if they did. I feel like they kind of went all out for Anthony Davis and got rejected.
Okay, but still, like, on paper, they didn't get Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Personally, I think, like, at the time I was okay with that, but going back, I feel like he just didn't do much.
And yeah.
Like, that doesn't really sit well with me.
And I also think from Magic Johnson's perspective, going into this offseason, I think he sort of recognized, ESPN is talking about it a lot, but, like, I don't think that any of the top free agents really have LA circled as their number one destination. At least the Lakers. Like, maybe the Clippers is different. But, like, Kawhi, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving, I don't think any of them are thinking, like, I'm going to go to the Lakers and team up with LeBron. I think, like, maybe that's, like, a second or third option if their first few options don't fall through. Even for guys, like maybe they can get a DeMarcus Cousins this offseason. But I don't think anybody is really thinking, like, heading into this offseason that they're going to team up with LeBron James. Like, that's their goal. Like, maybe it's a possibility, but I don't think anybody is, like, very set on that. And so I think, like, Magic Johnson might just kind of want out before another failure of an offseason happens, and even more blame and more pressure is put on him.
That's an interesting opinion. I don't know about that. I do buy into the whole, this sucks, let me go back to being a millionaire, billionaire, doing whatever I want, sitting courtside at other people's games, being able to go on Twitter, which is a weird thing that he mentioned. But I buy that argument. I do think that that's what he thought. But it doesn't seem too respectable when you give him the fact that he kind of just, like, messed up the Lakers a little bit. He like, did his thing, it didn't really work, and he just dipped. Like, he just didn't... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To what extent, like, I know you talked about, and I still disagree with you on this, but you talked about Kevin Durant coming to the Knicks on last episode and saying that might actually mess up their rebuild and, like, mess up their whole process moving forward in their future. Do you think that signing LeBron messed up the Lakers rebuild? Do you think that doing that, maybe even doing that, was a mistake? Like, was that the first mistake that Magic Johnson made?
If I'm the Lakers, I sign LeBron James. But if I'm LeBron James, I don't go to Lakers. And just, like, the move as a whole just kind of sat poorly with me as well when he made it, because one, it didn't seem like a winning move, and as far as I've followed basketball for the past 8 years, LeBron has been in the finals. However, also, just, I think it did mess up their young core to where it just put so much pressure, and, like, they were in trade rumors and all of that. And while I think if you're the Lakers, you do that because it made your team better, and also your young core probably didn't have a top 10 player in it. Like, I don't think Lonzo Ball or Brandon Ingram will ever be
a top 10 player in the NBA.
Probably.
Yeah. I think that's very, you can say that very comfortably.
Yeah.
I kind of understand what you're saying coming from that, but I also don't think it's fair to say in any situation that, like, signing a superstar as good as Kevin Durant or LeBron James is messes up a young core. Because even though it might throw off your timeline or it might mess up...
That's messing up your young core.
It might throw off your timeline and, like, sort of stunt some of their development.
That's also messing up your young core.
Yes. I'm saying, like, that messes it up a little bit, but you are just praying, hoping that any one of those... When you build a young core, it is based on the hope that any one of those guys will become anywhere close to as good as LeBron James or Kevin Durant is right now. And so signing that guy, even if he doesn't fit with the rest of your team perfectly in terms of age... LeBron James, Brandon Ingram, like, you're taking them with the second overall pick with some just, like, you know, stretch of a hope or desire that they become a top five player in the NBA, which LeBron James and Kevin Durant both are.
But that being said, if you bring in LeBron and you have no help with him, one, you're not going to get too far. Two, it messes up your timeline to where if you're not going to be that good now, yeah, and you're messing up being good for later. I always, in my mind, like, maybe it's being a Knicks fan or maybe it's being an NBA fan that has the Warriors here. I kind of say, hey, we're not going to beat the Warriors, so we might as well be good in 5 years as opposed to now.
Yeah. That's a little bit of a cynical view, but it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Like with the Warriors in the league right now, like, it's going to be very hard for any one team to take them down. But I don't think that's enough to really say, like, I don't think it's always necessarily NBA championship or bust. Like, making the conference finals or making the finals itself is still pretty damn good.
Yeah,
and they'll still sell tickets, you know?
Yeah, but the Lakers didn't do that, so.
That's true. And I think that part of the reason that Magic Johnson quit is, like, he signed LeBron, which I don't think was a mistake.
I don't either.
If you have the opportunity to sign the best player in the world, you do it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that the Lakers general managers or front office or presidents of basketball, whatever it is, I don't think they did the best job of managing their timeline after signing LeBron James. Like, I don't think they did a very good job of just picking a direction of, like, we're going to commit to winning right now or we're going to commit to winning in 3 years.
But that's what I'm
saying.
They
sort of didn't find a balance of, like...
Yeah, I agree. But with getting a star like LeBron James, I think if you do what Connor Flannery is saying and you do pick now or 3 years... 3 years, it's going to be hard because you have LeBron James on your roster. And right now, that almost requires you trading your young core.
Yes.
So that's what I'm saying.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, so signing a superstar messes up your young core. Of course, you'll get a return.
But it messes up your young core in that, like, all of a sudden the young core isn't what you're trying to have as the center of your roster. That's not what you're building around. You're building around that one superstar now. But the thing is, I think you could then send that young core off, package that for a guy like Anthony Davis, and then I don't think that's necessarily messing up your young core. It's just, like, capitalizing on the young core that you've built and, like, exchanging it for a more, like, in-the-moment kind of move. Which, I mean, teams like the Brooklyn Nets messed up in, like, trading for Kevin Garnett,
Paul Pierce,
Ray Allen. Well, I don't know what I'm...
Jason Terry.
Yeah. So I think there are some risk of that, but, like, that was also, like, that was sort of the worst possible ending of that trade, and, like, they traded for, like, 34-year-old Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. So, and it's a particularly bad example. There's always that risk, but I do think that, like, especially because Anthony Davis is, like, 25, so...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Last thing I want to talk about Magic Johnson is... Well, I personally said that this really doesn't feel like Magic Johnson because he's just historically good at everything he does and everyone just loves him and he seems to be a great people person, which is part of being a general manager. I found this post on NBA Chop Shop on Instagram, and he talks about how Magic Johnson quitting is actually consistent with what he usually does. He says Magic took over as the Lakers coach late in the 1994 season and they went 5-11 and he quit. His talk show, The Magic Hour, was canceled 8 weeks after its premiere in 1998. Magic quit the NBA Countdown crew 3 weeks before the season started in 2013. And finally, he just abruptly stepped down as the Lakers president of basketball operation without any notice. So,
I didn't know any of those, but I mean, it's interesting.
Shout out NBA Chop Shop. He's a really cool dude. But I think we'll get to see Magic Johnson in a more full light as the years go on and as this Laker team kind of progresses.
Yeah, I wish all the best for Magic Johnson and the Lakers front office and players. Let's move on and talk about David Yeager, former coach of the Kings, who was just fired earlier this week. And I think that...
So stupid.
Yeah, we were both sort of talking about it before the episode.
The Kings are still horrible at being an NBA team. Like, even worse than the Knicks, arguably.
Is Vlade Divac still there?
Yeah. And their owner, I forget.
He's kind of a crazy dude.
Yeah. Who said that Buddy Hield was Steph Curry. But that's a move that they hit. Like
has been closer to truth than anyone else expected.
Yeah, what made me so like upset about this is because the Kings have been so good at being. They've been making such good decisions. Like literally since they've traded DeMarcus Cousins, everything has been great. Like they drafted De'Aaron Fox, who looks like he's going to be a hit. You traded DeMarcus Cousins, who wanted out, for Buddy Hield. That was a very good return. You have Bogdanovich, who's a young player who's shows some promise. Willie Cauley-Stein, he might be a part of your long-term future. Not a bad, not the best get, but like he's a pretty solid, decent player. You got the number two overall pick in Marvin Bagley, who may be really good. Who knows?
Yeah,
and just it was working. And
I mean, everything is looking very good, and this team, I think even more importantly, this team exceeded expectations totally by a long
people
shot.
People had them in their power rankings in the bottom, what, like six of the league?
Very low.
Like them,
maybe lower.
Yeah, them and the Clippers just exceeded all expectations the most out of any NBA team in the league, I would
say. I'm pretty sure that the Kings finished as, like, the 9 seed in the West.
Yeah, they
did. So, like, this team was talented.
They would have made the playoffs in the East.
Yeah.
They would have been, like, the 7 seed in the East.
So to take a team that hasn't been good in years, that's looking very promising, a coach that clearly has done a good job helping to develop these guys.
Recently.
It doesn't make a lot of sense that, like, now you would decide to fire David Yeager.
Yeah, also, I think that his style is just very good for the modern NBA. I'm pretty sure Kings were top five in, I think maybe top three in pace in the NBA.
Yeah, their transition offense is so good.
It's crazy. Well, with De'Aaron Fox
going coast to coast, you've got, and then Buddy Hield is just a sniper. And the two of them just work so well together, especially in transition.
Yeah.
And Willie Cauley-Stein looks very good as a rim runner in transition as well.
And I'm pretty sure they shot a lot of threes too, even without being like an insanely good 3-point shooting team. They shot a lot of threes. They ran in transition, and that's kind of what the NBA is about right now.
Uh-huh.
And teams like the Kings and the Nets capitalize on that, even if they don't have the best talent in the league. They capitalize on that, and we look at Kenny Atkinson as probably a top 10 coach in the league, and then we see Dave Yeager getting fired by the Kings, and that just makes me really upset because I don't know why, but I have this like soft spot as a Knicks fan for Kings fans they suffer a lot too. And I'm not gonna sit up here and act like he's a top five coach in the league, but I would put him as at least a good one, just
for sure
above average.
Even beyond just like how good of a coach he is, we don't really know what's going on in the in the Kings locker room or whatever. But just like when they're out there on the court, they just whatever system they had going on was clearly working for their players very, very well.
Yeah, the system is the biggest thing.
I don't really understand why after what is a very successful season by the Kings' expectations and standards, you would fire their coach because he was sort of while obviously there's internal development, like their coach was at the head of that whole system and success.
This is my theory. I think that the only kind of star or just kind of like thing you could say against David Yeager as a coach this season from the Kings management's perspective is he did not play Marvin Bagley that much. And as a front office, it looks bad to your fans if the guy you drafted top five is just not really having an impact. We see that the same problem happened this year in Orlando with Mo Bamba. And I think that maybe my only theory is that the Kings front office was just like, hey, why aren't you playing our young guy? And he's like, no, we're gonna go make the playoffs. I'm gonna go play that guy like Bajinka, Bielitsa. I don't know, you know what I'm talking about, him. And we're going to go play that guy, and we're going to go out here and shoot a bunch of threes that Marvin Bagley can't do, and we're going to go and try to win games. And the Kings office was just like, no. And I feel like that could definitely be something that they like battled back and forth the whole year around. And I guess that makes sense if a coach is kind of just defying what people think, but like, come on.
I mean, that's the only really reasonable expectation is like that Dave Yeager was going for wins, and the front office didn't necessarily want that. You know, they wanted more to just like let their young guys
and just show
do their thing
and just show that they made a good pick in Marvin Bagley.
Yeah, and to be honest, when Marvin Bagley's been out there, he has looked pretty good. He's been solid. I think he's improved a lot throughout the season. But at the same time, like, he's averaging between 15 and 20 minutes per game, I think.
Yeah.
Like, which is just not very much.
Yeah, not what
compared
you
to, like, guys like Luka Doncic and Trae Young, who are taken in the same range.
Yeah.
So.
Moving on to playoff predictions. We're pretty much just going to give you just our thoughts on the first round in general, say who we'll think will win the series, and maybe just a note or two about each.
Yeah, potential X factors that could swing and potentially make the series more interesting or less interesting than we imagined, or, you know, I guess just make an upset or something possible. And I guess sort of what are going to be the most important things for these teams to move forward to the next round. Let's start off Western Conference, 1 seed versus 8 seed, Warriors versus Clippers. Bring out the brooms. That's a sweep, kids.
Yeah. I don't, like, I think the only thing that would be interesting is to see how, if Lou Williams just suddenly goes off, or how Montrezl Harrell will guard DeMarcus Cousins, but just,
yeah,
they don't have an answer for Kevin Durant.
They just,
now that it's the rest of the NBA.
Straight up, they just don't have enough guys to guard the Warriors players. Yeah. Like, you put Pat Bev on Curry, and, like, okay, like, that's a pretty, Pat Bev was just rated in the Atlantic poll as, like, one of the better defenders in the league, so, like, that's probably a not bad matchup. Okay, then you put somebody like Danilo Gallinari on Kevin Durant, I'm not sure you can say the same.
Barbecue
chicken. Who's going to guard DeMarcus Cousins? Like, you said Montrezl Harrell. Like,
he's like really maybe, short.
But he's small. You know, yeah. he's tenacious, and he's one of the best. He might be the best big man off the bench in the league, but
he's also, like, 6'8".
Yeah. He's just not.
Enough said about that.
Yeah. 4-0. Yeah, so I got them in a sweep.
Yeah, same.
Especially with no Tobias Harris. All right, moving on. The two seed versus 7 seed in the West, Nuggets versus Spurs. Now, this one's where it's a little bit more controversial.
This is such a good series because both teams, in my opinion, kind of want this matchup. Because both teams kind of suffer when they're playing against a superstar. And just like Kevin Durant or someone in the West or James Harden. Mm-hmm. Whereas they are both matching up against each other, teams that have, like, yeah, probably a top 15, 20 player, but not a top 10. And I think that both teams it'll be a battle of pretty, like, beautiful basketball with a lot of passing.
I think so. The Nuggets have been so good this season as a regular season team, but you also can't count out the fact that
they seem very
Pop is the best coach in the league.
And they also seem very, like, 2012 Atlanta Hawks ish.
2015. 2015. Where they won, like, 60 games or something,
And they just get swept by LeBron James because they're built for the regular season. So, or even one of those Raptors team. Also, DeMar DeRozan kind of chokes in the playoffs. So.
I don't think it's quite the same thing. Quite the same as the Hawks, though. I still have the Nuggets winning in six.
Really?
I'm
so split. I would
probably
go Nuggets in seven.
Okay.
Maybe Spurs in seven. I can't decide.
I just don't. So part of the problem with DeMar DeRozan in the playoffs has been that he's sort of very ISO heavy, right? And that just doesn't. That's a great strategy for the regular season, but that sort of, like, mid range only ISO kind of ball that DeMar DeRozan tends to play doesn't translate particularly well to the playoffs. And actually, like, I thought it would have been a little bit different, but the, like, advanced stats say that DeMar DeRozan's ISO, like, percentage, the possessions where he's using the isolation is actually up this season from last season. So while I don't think that it's, you know, I don't know if I'm, like, ready to say, like, okay, DeMar DeRozan's going to choke in the playoffs. I just don't think that the regular season DeMar DeRozan translates perfectly well to playoffs DeMar DeRozan.
I think if Gary Harris and Jamal Murray don't exceed expectations, or at least, like, live up to them very, very well, I think I could definitely see Spurs in seven. Just because they have more experience, and they have two star players where the Nuggets kind of only have one.
Yeah. I'm ready to say, though, that Jokic is the best player in the series.
I would say so, too. But I don't...
I think the
impact that he makes is big, but I don't know if it's, like, scoring to where in the playoffs, if you need a bucket, we're just going to throw it down to Jokic, and it's the automatic bucket.
But... First of all, he does more than that because he's such a great playmaker. He doesn't need to just be scoring to create offense. But I also think that that's particularly against a team that doesn't have a very big athletic center, like a Steven Adams or something. that's also part of the reason that the Nuggets wanted to match up with the Spurs, is like LaMarcus Aldridge is probably going to be the guy guarding Nikola Jokic a lot, or maybe guys like Jakob Poeltl. But like, if those are the guys that are on Nikola Jokic, they're not particularly quick or athletic. Like, I don't think they're going to match up very well against him. So if he's the best player in the series and you've got an aging LaMarcus Aldridge guarding him, I like that matchup for the Nuggets, and I think that he could have a big series.
Okay. I say, yeah, I'm on the fence. Okay,
I'm sticking with Nuggets in six.
Okay, going on to the next series, what is it, Trailblazers?
Trailblazers and Thunder, yeah.
Okay, here's the deal. Hopefully you have been watching or listening to this to know that I love the Trailblazers for some reason, just some arbitrary reason. But, I just can't justify in my head how the Trailblazers would win, because CJ McCollum has kind of been not that good lately. And while I think Damian Lillard's totally going to go off and he's going to kill the Thunder, I think the Thunder just have too many weapons and too many good defenders to slow Damian Lillard down, to where I'm just like, if they had Nurkic, I would easily go Blazers. I would go Blazers in six.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not totally ready to say that.
I think Enes Kanter will get killed, man.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But I'm going Thunder in seven. I think that the...
I'm going Thunder in six.
Thunder in six?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think that... It's Thunder in six or seven, I think. But I just... Like you said, the pick and roll offense, like, I don't know how Enes, if you're relying on Enes Kanter and Zach Collins to shut that down, that's not gonna work.
And also, this Blazers team, well, I think they are built for the playoffs. I think if Damian Lillard is kind of just the primary focus on defense, with like OKC has so many long defenders like Terrence Ferguson, Jeremy Grant, to where I think you're gonna have to rely on guys like Evan Turner to shoot threes, and that's never gonna end well, or Al-Farouq Aminu, or guys of that kind of range, to where that's just not going to end well. And I just think, I don't know, I'm not happy about this.
And I think that you're not going to put Paul George on Damian Lillard, because Damian Lillard's a little bit too quick. They're going to put Russell Westbrook on him.
That's what they've done this season. Yeah. If I was the coach, I would definitely put Paul George on Damian Lillard.
It's worth a try. It's worth throwing Paul George at him just to like mix it up. But I think that sort of no matter what, like, Damian Lillard is good enough offensively that he's still going to create problems. But I don't think that Damian Lillard by himself is enough to create enough of a problem to beat this team. I think the Thunder without, or the Trailblazers without Yusuf Nurkic just aren't a good enough team to beat the Thunder. Even though if Paul George was playing it the way that he was halfway through the season, and the Trailblazers had Nurkic, I would pick the Thunder. But the thing is, Nurkic is out, and Paul George has taken a little bit of a step back since his sort of shoulder injury, sort of tweaked it or something, and it's been sort of a nagging thing. And he's still playing, but he's just shooting a lot worse in the field. He's been a lot less effective. But I still got to go Thunder.
Yeah.
But that's why I have it in seven, not six. Yeah. It's because of Paul George.
Thunder in six. I'm sad.
Yeah.
Okay, next matchup.
Finally, probably the most interesting one on the Western Conference is Rockets versus Jazz.
I'm actually more intrigued by Nuggets Spurs, but I still think that this one's a good one. But personally, I saw some people that were saying that it would go seven either way. I kind of okay. Who do you have?
I have Rockets in seven. I think it's going seven, and it's going to be decided in that.
I think it's going to be like five or six.
Really, Rockets?
Yeah.
I don't know. I
don't think the Jazz have the offense to do it, like, at all. Like, Donovan Mitchell has been pretty good this year, but...
Yeah, but...
Like, what? Like, but who else?
But I don't think the Rockets have, like, a fantastic defense. You know, like, it's solid, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, the Rockets...
They don't have, like, that good of a defense, but...
And James Harden is much, much, much improved, I think, defensively this season. And Clint Capella is still one of the better defensive setters in the league.
We've been saying the same thing about the Rockets the whole year, and they finished as the 4 seed after starting, like, 2-15, something like that. Where, like,
it's just they're on such a hot streak. I don't know how anybody's gonna stop James Harden.
Yeah,
like someone's going to. They're not gonna win the championship, but the Warriors are gonna do it. But
oh, did you see that Patrick Beverley last night when the
teaching Jake Crowder?
Yeah, the Jazz were playing the Clippers, and at the end of the game or during halftime or something, Patrick Beverley was just teaching Jake Crowder how to guard James Harden without fouling, and I kind of love that so much.
Shout out to Patrick Beverley for that. It was so fun. But I do think that guys like Joe Ingles and Jake Crowder, like throwing them at them, and maybe even guys like Donovan Mitchell, just throwing a few different kind of defenders at James Harden, and just seeing what works. Like they've got enough versatile defenders that I like that, and especially because you've got Rudy Gobert behind you.
It doesn't matter.
I just think
it doesn't matter
if you can. So the way to defend James Harden, I think
he's going for 40.
If there's any way to defend James Harden, it's you got to force him to his right hand, and just not let him get that step back going to his left side, because that's his bread and butter. So you got to force him to his right hand. And he's not going to be able to get that step back going to his right hand if you're on his left side, because he's shooting with his left. So if you're forcing him to his right side and basically just letting him walk into the lane on his right side and just taking away everything on the left, you're just relying solely on Rudy Gobert. And while Rudy Gobert is, if there's anybody in the league who can do that at the rim, is Rudy Gobert, is like slowing down James Harden.
My man.
At the same time, like, that's going to put him in foul trouble.
James Harden is going to go for 40 points every night.
I just don't see how. I have so much faith.
I don't see any
situation in which you can completely shut down James Harden for four games, with the four games that would take to win a series. And that's what you have to do to beat this Rockets team.
Yeah.
Like, if you can't at least significantly slow down James Harden for four games, which is just, I don't even know if that's possible right now, then it's going to be very, very, very tough to win this series.
I would say.
And I think it's going seven. Because I think that James Harden will have a couple off games, but not enough to make them win this
Rockets in five or six. Very decisive.
Okay. Yeah. I still think Rockets in seven. I can see maybe six, but I like this Jazz team enough, and I think that they're such a good defensive team that, like, they've got to have one of the best chances at slowing down James Harden, other than like the Warriors, just because the Warriors have too much firepower.
Okay, Bucks Pistons sweep next.
Yeah,
next.
Agreed. Especially because Blake Griffin might not even play to start the series.
Yeah,
he sat out the last regular season game with like a swollen knee.
It's over. I could see Blake Griffin just going off for one game, but even if Blake Griffin goes for like 45, I don't know if this team will win. I don't know if the Pistons will win, just because the Bucks are really good at playing basketball.
I can see, like, if Blake Griffin was healthy, the Bucks may be losing one game with guys like Malcolm Brogdon sort of just out, but like
it won't matter.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't think so.
Next series.
I got the Celtics in six over the Pacers. Four or five seed. I skipped right to the 4 or 5 seed. I just went in the wrong order. Okay. Celtics 4 or 5 seed matchup. I got Celtics in six over the Pacers.
I have Celtics in five.
Okay.
I think it'll be very light work, just because the Pacers are not built for the playoffs without Victor Oladipo, and you can't have Bojan Bogdanovic taking your big-time shots, which is
You can't rely on him to be your leading scorer for a playoff series.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I just think the Celtics should win this series in 4 to 5, but I just think that idea that the Celtics are all of a sudden just going to flip a switch to the playoffs,
that's my theory.
I don't totally believe.
I totally buy it.
I think that they will flip a switch.
It's gonna be
great. I don't think it's gonna happen game one of the playoffs. I think it might take a couple. It might take. I might take that. It might take the first round series to flip that switch. That's my idea.
Yeah.
They might start off a little bit flat-footed and get there,
like the Cavs last year.
Mm-hmm. But so.
No, I don't. I don't. Yeah.
So yeah. So give me Celtics in six.
Celtics in five.
I just think they're too good.
Okay. Next series.
Let's go to Raptors versus Magic, 2 seed versus 7 seed.
You're going in a weird order, my guy.
I should have gone 1-8, 2-7.
Okay. Raptors Magic sweep. Raptors are sweeping the Magic. There's like the only Magic offense there really is Nikola Vucevic, and Marcus Gasol is just gonna lock that boy up. He's gonna lock him up.
So I was gonna say that I had the Raptors in five, but remembering the fact that Marcus Gasol is an NBA veteran who is one of the better post defenders in the league and former defensive player of the year.
Ex defensive player of the year.
I don't even know how the Magic are gonna score.
Yeah,
who else is gonna put the ball in the basket?
No one.
Like the Raptors. Yeah.
So are you also saying sweep?
So I'm gonna say sweep.
We're agreeing a lot on this.
So Bucks versus Pistons and Raptors versus Magic, we got sweep. I think that sort of shows, like, I don't really like the narrative.
The Eastern Conference is so top heavy that it's the first round isn't really that significant.
I don't love the narrative that the Western Conference is so much better than the Eastern Conference, because I think that the gap is closed a little bit. But I think the Western Conference is better, like, evenly distributed. Eastern Conference is very, very top heavy.
Yeah,
you look at, like, the best records in the league; they're like mostly in the East. So then the final first round series, 76ers versus Nets.
I have 76ers in, I want to say five. Yeah, I'm going five.
Yeah, I had five as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I was thinking that Joel Embiid could miss the first game, so that could push it to six.
Yes, that exact same thinking
but
as I had.
I think the talent's not there. I'm going to say six, because I think that D'Angelo Russell could just go off for one game, and I think that just Joel Embiid can miss a game, and maybe just the 76ers, just their three-point shooters just don't have good games, and they could miss a game. Those are all just possible scenarios and things that could go wrong for 48 minutes, to where I'm going to say 76ers in six games.
If Joel Embiid misses a game, this is going to six. If he doesn't, then it's going five.
I think either way it could go to six.
Yeah, that's my prediction is what I'm saying, though. But, like, I think that the 76ers have a tendency to struggle against, like, very short point guard, like, short, crafty, quick point guards, and that's kind of what D'Angelo Russell is, because generally you put Ben Simmons on their point guard. So Ben Simmons can lock up a tall point guard, but he's not the best at guarding, like, small point guards. And I think that, so the Nets all-star D'Angelo Russell is a small point guard, and I don't think that Ben Simmons is the best equipped to guard that. So he could just go off and have a couple big games. And I also think that Kenny Atkinson is very creative on the defensive end, especially with the zones. And so if Kenny Atkinson throws a couple of zones at the 76ers and forces them to hit big shots from beyond the arc, there's not that many guys on this roster that are super consistent at doing that, especially after the trades for Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris.
All right. So we really just summed up the first round. We're not going to have this whole bracket, because odds are we're going to be wrong about some stuff, to where, like, those matchups might not really matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's all for today.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Space to the Floor NBA Podcast. We hope you enjoyed. If you're listening on YouTube, leave a like and subscribe. And if you're listening on iTunes, just subscribe there, too, and leave a rating. That'd be cool. If you're listening on YouTube, follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Links are down below. And thank you so much. My name is Connor Gielan.
And I'm Connor Flannery.
And see you next time.
Peace.